This is Henry Banks of People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up on the show today, a conversation with Gary Johnson. He is the director of the First Nations Center at the University of Wisconsin in Superior. We will discuss education and the Johnson Open, which is a charitable event coming up in the Twin Ports. Also on the show, Professor Teresa Hardaway and Sherdale Maddox-Simmons of Project Natural will join us to talk about a natural hair symposium coming to the Twin Ports. All of this and more coming up on People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio after this news. People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Henry Banks. Thanks for joining us this evening. I am honored, delighted to be in the studio today with Gary Johnson. He is the director of the First Nations Center at the University of Wisconsin in Superior. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So let's go right into our conversation. If you would, for our listeners, share with our listeners the mission and values of the First Nations Center.
Okay. Well, the center is here to try to assist Native students, recruiting those students to bring them here, and then programming that will help them in all facets of their education. We help with the admission process, we help with financial aid, and we also have a Native American student organization that's part of our center. We try to provide a little bit of Indian country here and at the university for these students.
That's really great. So, what is the mission, though, of the organization?
Well, the center, it came out of the Act 31 legislation back in the late 80s, and we're trying to bridge that cultural awareness gap between Native and non-Native people. The center here is for students, but we also have a First Nations program. We have a minor in First Nations Studies, which I also teach, and I'm the program coordinator for that. So we're trying to educate non-Native people. And for Native students, we're trying to give them those windows and mirrors that they need to attach themselves to a place. Many times for Native students coming to a place like this, you feel like a visitor in somebody else's house. And so the center is here to try to ease that transition. Most people think of UWS as a very small school, but for Native students, that's a large jump from the reservation to the university, and it can sometimes be a very cold place. And so one of the things the center does is try to provide a welcoming place where they can come and be with other Native people and have somebody there that knows what they've been through and has kind of cleared the path for them.
Mm-hmm. So how long has the center been in existence here on campus?
The center started probably a year before I came, and I've been here for 27 years. So we've got some longevity here, especially me. Like I said, it came out of the Act 31 legislation, which was part of an answer to the violence and protesting going on at the boat landings during when the treaty rights were reaffirmed. A way to curb that was to provide a means of trying to teach, to bridge that cultural awareness gap. And so the center has been trying to fill that.
So obviously you enjoy your job. You've been here for 27 years. If you just take a moment to share with us some of the joys that you have come to receive while the director of the center.
Well, it's one of the first things, you know, before I came here, I was the K-12 principal, and I taught English for 8 years down at my tribal school at LCO. One of the nice things is that eventually I find students that I taught at that level come up here, and then I get to see that progress. I thought that was finally over, and yet this last year, one of those students still came. He's a grandpa now, but to see him actually, you know, fulfilling that dream of getting an education and seeing students go through that to help them through that process. And when you watch them go across that stage and they have that eagle feather on their mortarboard, gives you a good sense of satisfaction.
Mm-hmm. That's really great. I know that you all in the center have done a lot of things in the community to engage and build a community from the standpoint of Native American perspective. Why, in your opinion, is the Native American perspective important?
Well, we're here first. This is Indian land, Indian country. Superior is the geographical center of the Ojibwe Nation. And sometimes people forget that. And so we want to try to remind them of who we are, that we were here first, and that we still have a lot to offer in a lot of different areas. We've been in the same place for a very long time, and we can offer a perspective on that culturally, politically, and even climate-wise, stuff like that. So we're here to try to set the record straight. Part of it is that, but to also let people know that we're still here, you know, that the Native people is still a very large part of this community and in this region.
Absolutely. So on campus at the University of Wisconsin in Superior, you have the Multicultural Center, you have the First Nations Center, you have the Office of Diversity and Inclusion. Can you talk briefly about how these offices work together to make sure that all students really are getting a high-quality education on campus? How do you collaborate, for example, with those other offices?
Well, people of color have different various needs that they bring with them to a university and to an educational system and stuff like that. And the system is not always set up to recognize those needs or to see those needs or to fill those needs. So places like the Multicultural Center and Department of Diversity and Inclusion, they can try to help with those things. What I'm lucky enough is that I can focus just on Native people. Mm-hmm. And what I bring with me is having come through the system myself and understanding, you know, that leap from the reservation to the university, and then what it's like to navigate those waters when it's not so much that the dominant society wants you to assimilate like they used to, but still there is this idea that our ways don't have significance. And so what we try to do is offer programming throughout the year and services to the students to let not just them, but also the community know that it's still important to know these things.
Mm-hmm. And it helps to bring all of us together.
Yes, we do. I do a talk in the fall about Columbus, about Thanksgiving. But we also do things like the fall walk around out at Patterson Park where we bring people together. And I try to, we talk first about the cultural aspects of Native people, about recognizing the changing of the seasons and why that's important to be in touch with Mother Earth. And then there's a walk around the lake, and then after that lake we have a meal together and fellowship, and it's to bring people together to show that this is, a lot of times people are afraid of Native people and Native culture and stuff like that because it's very foreign to them. And we're trying to show them that we're not here trying to, you know, put anybody down or say that our way is better, but just to see what we do and to see that it is something that is good for everybody.
So when I hear you say people are afraid of Native people, would you say they're afraid of people of color in general?
Well, there's a tendency to fear what you don't know. Mm-hmm. And most people grow up without any experience or education about people of color, Native people. And so what we try to do is, like I talked about before, is offer those windows and mirrors so people can see us, you know, that we're here. Too many people think in terms of stereotypes of Native people. And when we don't match that stereotype, it's like we're invisible. Mm-hmm. And so we're saying we're part of the contemporary community too, and we're still here. Yes, we do ceremonies and we have our traditions and customs, but we're part of now also, not just the past.
Right. And the systems and the customs, all vitally important.
Exactly.
To the culture.
We put up a spirit pole out here every spring, and people tend to think of that as a Native thing. It's Native in that that's part of what we do, but that thing is there for everybody, mm-hmm. to protect everybody, to, you know, and in the past, you know, people have complained that it was a religious object. I said, religion has nothing to do with it. In fact, I know people that were atheists that went out there and meditated by that pole. I saw of a Christian out there reading their Bible by that pole. And that's exactly what that's about. And that's what our culture is about, bringing people together.
Yes, it is.
We're hoping to put together a medicine wheel out there at that spirit pole. And that medicine wheel represents the four colors of man and about us coming together, that we all have something to share in this world and to be together.
This is Henry Banks with People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. I've been in conversation with Gary Johnson. He is director of the First Nations Center at the University of Wisconsin in Superior. We'll be right back. This is Henry Banks. I'm glad you are tuned in to People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. I am talking with Gary Johnson of the First Nations Center at the University of Wisconsin in Superior. We are talking education in the Native community and the upcoming Johnson Open Golf event. I appreciate you sharing with our listeners the importance of the First Nations Center, the work that you all are doing, making an impact on the university campus at the University of Wisconsin in Superior, but also making a major impact in the community and in the region. So that's vitally important. That is something I believe our listeners should be very aware of. You're here today also to talk about the Johnson Open. Mm-hmm. I'm excited about the Johnson Open, but I want you to share with our listeners what the Johnson Open is and why you decided to do this some years ago.
Okay. Well, it's a fun golf fundraiser for the American Indian Scholarship Fund here on campus. The First Nations Center has provided a $1,000 scholarship each year to a Native student. This thing started off about 20 years ago as a family thing. We had a bunch of birthdays at the same time, and I thought, why not put the two things together? Maybe we can make some money to help students. One of the biggest roadblocks for Native students is financial. They do get financial aid, but it's hard to get out of college in 4 years. And so there's a tendency for that financial aid to run out. And the scholarship that we provide helps them to complete their degree. It's geared towards juniors and seniors that demonstrate a financial need. And they do an essay in which they talk about how they're going to use their education to help Native people and stuff like that. So it's part of retention. It's part of the graduation rate and things like that. I've seen so many students that have slipped, they've not quite completed because they had to work or they had to go back home because of financial considerations. So I started this, you know, a while back, and we've been putting money into that, and the golf fundraiser does that.
So the Johnson Open, what are you hoping to have happen? I believe it's like a two-person teams?
Well, the format is two person, and it's a shootout. It's a kind of a different format in that you do six holes, which is best ball, which is you both hit your ball and from tee to green, and you pick whoever had the best score on that. The second six holes are alternate shot, where first one person hits, then the next person hits from where that person hit, so on. And then the last six holes are a scramble where you hit the ball, you both hit the ball, and you pick which one's the best one on the way to the green. So it's a little bit different format. I try to do things a little bit different, and people seem to really enjoy it. It's a lot of fun.
Absolutely. I'm here with Gary Johnson. He is the director of the First Nations Center at the University of Wisconsin in Superior. We're talking about the First Nations Center, but right now we're talking about the Johnson Open, a fundraiser for Native American students at the University of Wisconsin in Superior. When is the event and where will it be held?
It's going to be Friday, July 28th at Nemadji Golf Course, a 9 a.m. shotgun start.
Okay, so.
And we're looking for people to play. We're also looking for donations, sponsors. There's all, you know, we have a post-tournament meal, and we give away prizes. I've got prizes from the professional teams, the Packers, the Brewers, the Twins, the Vikings, and from area golf courses, from different businesses and things like that. So I try to get people something for coming and participating in this.
Absolutely. So it's going to be at the Magic Golf Course in Superior, right?
Yep.
And so there are a lot of avid golfers around here.
I'm one of them.
And you're one of them. Carl Crawford, who is the human rights officer for the city of Duluth, is a UWS alumni. He's an avid golfer. So listeners who may want to get interested and be a part of this, is there a number that they could call to reach you to get more information? How do they sign up? Do they just show up at the golf course? How does that work?
Sure. We do have a Facebook page, First Nations Center. We do have a web page. And the center's number is 715-394-8132. And so you can just leave a message there if there's nobody there. We'll take sign-ups right up until the tournament starts. There's a sign-up sheet out at the Maggi. You just tell people, you know, that you want to reserve a time there. Like I said, it's a two-person teams, but they send you out in foursomes, so you can keep an eye on each other. Not that that's needed. Like I said, we'll take people right up until the last minute if we can. I want to try to get as many people out there as we can.
Mm-hmm. So for someone listening right now who isn't a golfer, but they would like to make a contribution to the scholarship fund, how may they do that?
There's a number of different ways that you could have. If you want, you can buy a tee box sign for $50 or $100, and then you can put that up. We put that up for you, or you could just send a check to me here at UWS in care of the American Indian Scholarship Fund. There's a lot of different ways you can do that, but yeah, we can use as much money as we can get. That's what the whole idea is.
Absolutely. So, how much money are you hoping to raise? Just what is your anticipated goal for 2017?
I was hoping to raise about $2,000.
$2,000. I thought you were going to say a larger number.
I would like to, but there's a lot of expenses that are involved in doing this thing too. So, but if we can net about $2,000, I'd be happy. We have a foundation account, and it all goes into that. So,
okay,
all proceeds go into that scholarship fund.
Okay,
except for the expenses for the meal, and we do give out cash prizes too. So, we have two different flights. One flight is the championship flight for the more, you know, professional golfers. Then we have another flight where for the people that aren't so good.
So there is certainly those options and opportunities for,
we do have prizes for men and women too. So
for the novice and for the experienced.
Yep, that second flight, we go first, second, and we drop down to sixth, seventh, and eighth. So you got a pretty good shot.
Yeah, very good, very good. Anything else that you would like to share with our listeners that we may not have had an opportunity to talk about?
Education is the key to change. If you look at it historically, education was used as a tool to get rid of our culture. But we have learned how to turn that around now and use education as a tool to success. One of the things we do is we provide the stepping stones for our students to make the world better. When I went to college, a lot of times when you got a college education, there was no opportunities to use that on the reservation, and you tended to move away. Today, we're looking at broadening. We're putting people, educated people, into positions on the reservation. We're creating businesses and things like that, and education is the key to be able to do that. That's how we'll change things. That's how we'll change the politics. Learning about tribal sovereignty and how to work with the federal government and the state government and things like that.
Absolutely. Once again, if you can give the telephone number and contact information for the Johnson Open,
sure,
that would be great. And I want to take this time to thank Gary Johnson, director of the First Nations Center at the University of Wisconsin in Superior, for joining us on People of Color today also.
Well, thank you for having me. Like I said, we have a Facebook page, First Nations Center, UW First Nations Center. We also have a website, UW Superior First Nations Center. And we have a phone. So the phone number is 715-394-8132.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is Henry Banks with People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. I've been in conversation with Gary Johnson. He is director of the First Nations Center at the University of Wisconsin in Superior. We'll be right back. Want to take this time to send a shout out to Fred Keller in Sandstone, Minnesota. Fred is from the Deep North and the Scally Line. They are debuting their new recording. This is a collection of originals that come right out of the Deep North, tells of Minnesota old and new. The Deep North and the Scally Line. You can go to www.deepnorthmn.com for more information. That's www.deepnorthmn.com. Welcome back to People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Henry Banks. I'm honored, delighted, and excited to have in the studio today Sherdale Maddox-Simmons and Teresa Hardaway. Teresa is professor at the University of Minnesota in Duluth, and Sherdale works at the Community Action Duluth Agency as a community health worker. I want to just take this time to welcome you to the show, and thank you for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
I want to know a little bit more about you, Sherdale, because I'm meeting you for the first time.
Yes.
So would you share with our listeners a little bit more about the work you do, but what actually brought you to our community?
Sure. Well, I just landed about 3 months ago, actually. And my husband is a professor at the medical school and a research scientist. And so UMD, or the medical school, brought us here. I have a passion and have always had a passion for health and health equity. And so I was able to get a wonderful job as the community health worker, the first ever at Community Action Duluth, as we were transitioning. So as a community health worker, I am pretty much the bridge for the community. I specifically work with, but not limited to, the African American and the Native community in being a bridge for housing, for health, for any type of finances, employment, really similar to like a life navigator.
So how's it going so far? How are you enjoying our community?
I am. It's been very welcoming. And at Community Action specifically, I've got to work on some really great projects. And myself, along with a few other folks at Community Action, are revamping a program that they had there called STEPS, Standing Together with Endless Possibility. And myself, as the kind of spearheading it, it's definitely going to have a health focus, and it's going to be culturally specific to the African American and the Native American community.
Absolutely. Where are you from?
I'm from all over.
So prior to coming to
prior
Duluth.
Prior to coming to Duluth, Dallas, Texas.
Oh, very good.
Yes.
Very good. And the weather?
Well, I lived in Alaska for a while.
Okay.
So for about 3 years or so. So I'm kind of used to, you know, the snowy, dreary days.
Okay.
So it's been beautiful, really.
Okay.
And nice and refreshing from Dallas. Mm-hmm. It's a little landlocked.
Well,
no
kept
water.
Secret, right?
Yes, exactly.
Absolutely. So, Professor Hardaway, you've been on the show before.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell our listeners who are learning about you for the first time what you do in the community and what brought you here?
Sure. So much like Sherdell, I'm coming here because of the job at University of Minnesota in Duluth. I teach graphic design there. I'm also coming from Dallas.
Oh, okay. I did not know that. Okay.
Small world. Yes. So I actually got here in last August. So in August will be a full year for me. I've seen summer and endured the winter, even though I'm told it wasn't a very harsh winter. But
it was a very light winter.
I made it through. I got my undergraduate at the University of North Texas in Fashion Design and African American Studies. And then I was working in the industry as an apparel designer and a graphic designer. And then I went back so I could teach in higher education and got my MFA in design research and anthropology. So I do a lot of, you know, research-based work that has to, you know, explicitly do with design. So how do those things connect? You know, how can we make our world a better place and use design to help solve those problems creatively, involving our user and making sure that we're designing for the people, things like that. So those are the things that I'm interested in, and particularly this project with hair.
This is going to be an exciting conversation. Yes. So how's it going for you?
How is it going for me in the community? I think that it's going well. When I first got here, I made it a point to not leave Duluth because of the not finding community. So I made it a point to make sure I found those. I opened up, you know, myself to be able to meet new people. And I think that's really, it's going well for me. I think that's when I first talked to people of color here in Duluth, that's one of the things they're like, people end up leaving because there's, you know, no one that looks like us. And I wanted to make sure that wasn't the case for me. If I left, it needed to be legitimate. So I was like, I can find these people. And I think I have. Sherdell being one of them, you know, I think that, I mean, things are going pretty well. So.
And so I just want to share this with our listeners and with you all here. The last census that came out, the African American community recognized or realized the largest percentage in increase of all groups in the Twin Ports.
What is our percentage?
It's not very high, but
it's increasing.
But it's increasing substantially. So that's good news.
Awesome.
That is good
news.
Yeah. So you're here today to talk about a natural hair symposium that's coming up.
Yes.
And I'm just going to let the two of you just get right into it and tell our listeners what is the natural hair symposium, why it's so important to do.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I want to start off by like kind of first talking about how we got connected
and
how we started this project. So like I said before, I do research-based, you know, design-based work. And my thesis coming out of my graduate school was called Project Natural. And natural is just like a blend term, meaning nappy and natural together. So Project Natural, what that is, was an initiative to empower women, to educate women, to connect women together around this topic, this phenomenon of natural hair. The natural hair movement is pretty big. You know, it's continuing to gain steam, and there's been so many groups and so many organizations surrounding this. So I decided to study that academically. And there's not a lot of academic research on, you know, natural hair and how it affects our self-identity and, you know, and then not even to mention, like, in design research, there's, like, none, you know, at all. And so what I ended up coming out with that project was this poster exhibition. And the poster exhibition, what it did was it brought women together. You know, again, it did all the three things that I was talking about. It empowered them, it educated them, and it connected them to, like, say, oh, my gosh, you know, do you know a hairdresser here? And, I mean, there were so many connections made. And, I mean, I got so many hugs just from seeing, like, artwork of women with natural hair. Like, people were just like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe, you know, academics care this much about, you know, us. So it was just, that was an awesome thing because I thought I was going to empower them, but they were really empowering me. And so with that, I also was creating a mobile application. And so I have that already done, and hopefully this semester I'm going to be working with some students in the computer science department to be able to move that mobile app forward. So the design is already done, the, you know, the UI, the user interface is already completed, but now I want to move that phase into once I get more funding and whatnot. So I had this project, I went to Zeitgeist, and I was like, I want to do an exhibition, you know. And so then they were like, great, you know, here's the month that it's available. And so July is when I'll be, you know, setting up this exhibition. And then Sherdell, I met you. When did I meet you? It was in the theater, in the teatro.
Yes. It was the piece, Echoes of Peace.
Yes. It was Echoes of Peace, art gallery, right?
Yes.
And so we met there, and we started, I don't know, I think that you started talking about natural hair.
Yes.
And I was just like, what? You know?
Yes, because the, well, as kind of like the kickoff event for the STEPS program at Community Action Duluth, we wanted to really engage the community on the socioeconomic issues around hair. And so, you know, that was like the best thing to do. And so as you and I, you know, got to talking and definitely about natural hair, it's like, we need to put this together.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's so many social implications, you know, with natural hair. Like, you know, I've worked on so many other groups where it's like women can't go to the job, you know, for their, to get their interview with natural hair. They have to straighten it. Mm-hmm. Then they feel comfortable to wear it natural. Even the whole thing with Michelle Obama and, you know, her now, like everybody's just like going crazy because her hair like looks natural now because she doesn't have to flat iron it all the time. So, you know, things like that, like all those implications really affect our self-identity. So I thought it really important. And I just saw the just the link between what we were doing, like so that it just had to combine.
Well, you said flat iron. I don't mean to cut you off there, but you said flat iron. So some of my listeners, a lot of them probably don't know what a flat iron is. So can you explain that?
Sure. So a flat iron is going to be a heating device. It'll be made of like metal blades. Don't tell me what kind of metal. I can't tell you. but what you do is you just take your hair and you're going to press, you know, press the hair in between the two blades and go down and so that your hair is straightened. So, you know, your hair could be naturally curly, but a flat iron, you know, using that with heat is going to, you know, make your hair straight.
Absolutely.
Or a chemical relaxer.
Sure.
Which chemical relaxer, you know, has a chemical in it that will permanently straighten your hair. And so, and what that is it can actually be really damaging for our scalp, and it, you know, has correlational data linked to like alopecia and fibroid tumors. And so when, you know, we talk about Project Natural, that's why the push is forward. You can still wear your hair straight as a natural, but my push was to, you know, make sure that we were using healthy products for our hair because, you know, we are the ones who have to end up with, you know, some type, you know, tumors and, you know, alopecia, things like that. So it's
absolutely
just unhealthy.
I know, Shardale, you wanted to say something too.
Yes. So along the lines of what you were saying, as far as the, you know, worried about, well, what we're going to wear to work or how our hair is going to look, and then how that actually plays out in our stress levels and how it leads to the health disparities that we have in the African-American and the Native community. You know, I believe that those are definitely linked.
Not being able to feel like yourself, not being able to naturally be who you are.
Exactly.
Definitely. You have to go home and be a completely different person, you know. Code switching, you know, is what that's called. So I have to be a completely different person in the workplace versus, you know, when I'm at home with my family, you know, I can't feel comfortable, you know, where I'm at. Oh, you know, 8 hours a day. And that's a problem.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I have this question, so I'm going to throw it out there in just a moment. And please understand that I'm putting it out there because our listeners need to know the do's and don'ts of African heritage hair, for example, as it relates to women. So that question is it true that you should never touch a black woman's hair? Is that a taboo? Because I know when I, you know, was coming up, that was a no-no. You did not do that. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. I'd say yes. If you do not have permission and seek permission, you know, I feel that that's something that's very deep-rooted as far as the, you know, why you aren't supposed to touch a black woman's hair. It's not just the literal, you know, invasion of space. But what has that meant for us historically during slavery when, you know, we essentially were not ours?
And there were fetishes.
Exactly. Yeah. Fetishes and so on and so forth. And thinking of going farther back than that or in Africa, you know, your head and your hair is something that's very important. It's very symbolic. And so, you know, no one is just allowed to have their hands in it.
The hair, and we're talking about, you know, back in Africa, like our hair meant something. So it could, you know, you could be, it meant that you were married. It meant that you were mourning. Like it has so many more implications than what today I think has. But it really was, you know, connected to your identity in such a way that it was almost sacred. Like even the hairdresser, like when we talk about the hairdresser here in America, how it's like, oh, I don't go to that person. Like, I don't know them, build. And that's all historically based. Like, it was, mm-hmm. you're really, you know, attached to this person's soul when you're doing their hair. Mm-hmm. And so those traditions have kind of carried forward. So I would agree. I talked to like over 200 women when I was doing my project, my thesis for Project Natural. And I had mixed responses, you know. It depends on who was asking them and how you were asking it. Mm-hmm. So you can't just say, oh, can I touch your hair? Because if you were looking kind of crazy, like, ooh, can I touch it? Like, really, mm-hmm. you know, I don't really understand this. Or, you know, you might have a disgusted look on your face. Well, then absolutely not. Everyone that I interviewed had an experience where people have touched their hair. And they were offended, yeah. which, you know, is normal, I think. Mm-hmm. Yes. So I don't think that it's taboo. If you're asking and you have a relationship with this person, you really are interested, then the person will be genuinely mm-hmm. be able to tell, you know. But no, do not go
just
up
in general. Yes.
Just you know, in general.
If we're in the grocery store, yeah. don't yeah. touch my hair.
Don't touch your hair.
Yeah. No.
Common sense. Don't yes. touch the hair.
Right.
So I'm here with Sherdale Maddox-Simmons and Teresa Hardaway. We're talking natural hair.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking natural hair.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about the importance of hair in the African heritage and the Native heritage communities. We'll be right back. Take this time to send a shout out to Fred Keller in Sandstone, Minnesota. Fred is from the Deep North and the Scally Line. They are debuting their new recording. This is a collection of originals that come right out of the Deep North, tales of Minnesota, old and new. The Deep North and the Scally Line. You can go to www.deepnorthmn.com for more information. That's www.deepnorthmn.com. We got orders to die. We'll switch the track over and we'll head for the freight. We'll jerk a drink from the tank and we'll sweat out the way. This is Henry Banks with People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. We close the show today with a conversation about natural hair with Professor Teresa Hardaway and Sherdale Maddox-Simmons of Project Natural, an upcoming natural hair symposium coming to the Twin Ports. Women really are in this from the standpoint that it has a lot to do with self-esteem.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It has a lot to do with our history and our culture.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But as I go to some of the hair stores, and look at all of the products that are out there. And you alluded to it earlier, Professor, about straightening your hair and having to look mm-hmm. a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
The expenses related to that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Can you talk about the expenses related to that as opposed to natural hair?
Well, it's funny that you would ask that because I want to say that, okay, if you stop relaxing your hair, that you will not have that big of an expense. But you can, though.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, because, I mean, products, I mean, because of the natural hair movement, it has elevated the amount of products that are available for women who have natural hair. And so you can kind of become what they'd call in the natural hair community like a product junkie
mm-hmm.
and start buying up all these products because, again, that's something that was lost to us. You know, when we got here, you know, in the shores of America, they shaved our heads, you know, and mm-hmm. so you'll see a lot of slave pictures of slaves where they have bandanas on their heads or they're wearing wigs of their, you know, masters, you know, things like that because, you know, the that identity, you know, the ways of doing hair, we didn't have time, you know, we're working 6-7 mm-hmm. days a week. And so, you know, we didn't have time to do our hair, you know, those historical things were lost. And so now you have these women kind of scrambling about trying to like just buy all the products that they think will work for them. And so they're trying to find this stuff out. But so I like to push the fact that not having a relaxer in your hair is just healthier,
mm-hmm.
You know, and it can be less expensive. Like that's something that natural hair can definitely afford you
mm-hmm.
is that it is less expensive. But I don't know if you have anything.
Yeah. Well, to bring it to our event, that it is something that we're seeking to do as far as empowerment for all of the women there. So we are going to demonstrate some ways that you can very cost effectively make your own hair products.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to do a demonstration of some hair butters. So So it would work as like a hair moisturizer. I do feel that there is a certain amount of privilege that comes along with having natural hair.
Mm-hmm.
Because, one, the workplace, you know, for you to have either be in a place of power or in a position of power where you can walk into your workplace mm-hmm. and know that you're not going to be fired
mm-hmm.
Because your hair may, you know, not look like the norm or the standard or how they want it to look. And as Teresa was saying, as far as product junkies, there are a lot of products that cater to natural hair or that really promote and push, you know, natural hair, and they are expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So I do believe that there is, you know, a privilege that's associated with it. And it's also something that we're planning on discussing mm-hmm. at the event.
Mm-hmm. Oh, very cool. So why don't you talk about the event? What's the day going to look like?
Okay, wonderful. So, you know, so we're coming together. Our day is going to look like when we first come in, it starts at 3 o'clock. This is on Saturday, July 8th. And we'll start with my exhibition. So you'll have, you know, 45 minutes to an hour to kind of, you know, look at this, be empowered by this artwork and design work. And this is, you know, for everyone in the community. Not only,
yes,
you
everyone.
Know, people of African heritage or Native, you know, heritage can attend. We want everyone to feel, you know, like, oh man, I can get something out of this. I can be educated mm-hmm. or learn mm-hmm. some things, you mm-hmm. know. And so, you know, we'll start with that. Then we'll move into some demos. You know, we'll move into that hair mm-hmm. butter, like we were talking about, you know, ways in which we can, you know, create things for our hair to make our, you know, make our days easier trying to moisturize. That's a really huge thing for women with natural hair. And then we'll move into some presentations. We'll move into the Teatro of the Zeitgeist, which the Zeitgeist is one of our sponsors, and we thank you so much. But we'll move into the Teatro, and we'll have some presentations, and then we'll have some more demos. We're planning on doing a headscarf demo. So that's going to be ways, again, when we talk about natural hair, we also talk about protective styling.
Headscarf. That's kind of an old school concept, right? Or is it new school too?
I think it's always been there.
Okay.
I do. I feel that the, you know, there's been periods of time when it was more in the forefront and then periods of time when it wasn't.
Okay.
But I think it's always been there.
That's very cool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so we'll have that. We'll have headscarf demo, and then we'll move into like a panel discussion. And so we'll have people up there to be able to answer questions from the audience. But then other people in the audience can also give their feedback and, you know, kind of talk about their experiences as well. And we can have a nice conversation about this, again, to help educate, but once again, empower us. You know, once we see that
yes.
other people have those same experiences as us, it allows us to be like, oh man, you know, I've had some bad hair days. Like my mm-hmm. afro hasn't always turned out as round
sure.
as I want it to be. So like when people can just relate to other people, we're excited about that. And then of course at the end, we're going to be giving away goodie bags and stuff. So you'll have to get there early
yes,
so that
please.
You can get your
get
tickets.
Early. Yes.
And you know, cause first come first serve, we only have a limited amount, but we do have some awesome sponsors who have given us
yes.
some stuff that is going to be great for you. It's going to be all free. One of those things I know for sure.
The tickets are free as well?
Yes.
It is a
wow.
completely free event.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Yes.
Completely free.
Is very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So you'll be getting
cool.
some free artwork. I'm going to print out some posters for people to take home. There'll be some free product. You'll get to keep the scarves if you're part of the, you know, scarf demo.
Yes.
You'll get the free product, the hair butter. I mean, there's so many things that we're doing. This is,
yes.
it's only going to get better in the next years to come. But
wow,
it
this
is yeah.
exciting. It
yes.
really is. First time in Duluth,
yes.
right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So is there anything else you want to share about the day?
Did I miss anything?
No. I think you were very thorough.
Okay. So I want to ask a question. You haven't touched on this. So,
sure.
Is there going to be any part of your symposium that is directed at men?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Very good question. We actually talked about this when we were setting this up.
Okay.
You know, we are a small little group here.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And, you know, my focus for Project Natural is specifically focused on women.
Okay.
And so, you know, I actually got a grant from the University of Minnesota, a small chancellor's grant, to help me print out the artwork. And so that's all of my research.
Sure.
Based.
Sure.
And so we just kind of start to continue focusing on that. But we are definitely open, you know, in the next years to come to be able to, you know, explore those other opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
But for now, yes, it is like focused on the empowerment of
okay.
black women.
I just wanted to ask that question because I know men have hair things
yes,
that they deal
yes.
with as well.
Yes.
And for all intents and purposes, men pay for some of the products that the women are getting.
Yeah.
You know, so a lot of those, not always, but a lot of those dollars come from the spouses.
Yeah. And we're, and we're not excluding men at all from this particular event.
Yeah.
Like, we welcome as any and everyone as far as, and it would be welcomed in the dialogue too, you know, during our discussion phase.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
We would love to hear from the men and, you know, and to know what their struggles are as well, because I know that there are some.
Yeah,
you know?
Their experiences are going to be very relatable to all of us.
Yes.
You know, we're all going to, we all face that time, some type of discrimination based on, you know, our hair. And so their experiences are going to be very welcome.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, the hair butter stuff, they're going to be able to
use. They can use the hair butter as well.
When you
the
said products. That, I was like, you know, men would want to use that as well.
Yeah, the products they'll be able to use. So there's a lot of stuff that is still going to be, you know, applicable to, you know, black men. So,
very cool. So, when is the event? Contact information, if there's a telephone number, Facebook page.
Sure.
Folks can connect with that.
Yeah, so it is Saturday, July 8th. It's going to be from 3 to 6. Again, this is a free event, open to the public. Refreshments will be served. We would like to first thank our sponsors, Community Action Duluth. We have Zeitgeist, Blackbird Revolt. We also have a product sponsor, if you want to.
Yes, Talia Wajid is our product sponsor.
So we'll have some nice free products in our bags for you. Again, arrive early. If you would like more information, you can go to our Facebook page. My Facebook page is go to Project Natural, and it's in the events section. Or you can just search Natural Hair Symposium, and it should pop up right there.
Why did you do this? I want to go back to that question. Why did you do it? I know you kind of alluded to it, but, you know, it had to be something going on, which really pulled you to this point of, I need to do this.
Yeah.
We need to do this. We need to make this happen. Because for me, what you're doing is making our community even better by doing things like this.
Yeah. So. Well, I can speak on me. How this all started was back with my own natural hair journey in 2012, when I cut off all of my hair and I had a small little afro and I didn't know what to do with my hair. And I didn't feel confident. I didn't feel empowered. I didn't feel like there was a community who could help me and connect me with people to help me do my hair. And so that's where it started for me. That's where this research was like, okay, this is important, because why do I feel alienated here when there are so many other people of color around? Why do I still feel alone in this journey? And so for anyone who may be thinking about going natural, or, you know, is natural and just doesn't know what to do with their hair, you know, things like that, I want to make sure that we're available to them and say, hey, everyone has faced these same experiences. Here's what you do.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why, you know, me. Personally.
I knew it had to go back some, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'd say for myself, I feel like it was always there, but it was really concentrated as far as the need for these types of activities was when I was in Shreveport, Louisiana. I was a community liaison there, and we really engaged the community, my husband and I, on the health disparities in that particular part of Louisiana. And in that, in me doing that work, you know, you get to see those underlying things that are happening that are perhaps not as talked about, like, you know, someone being diabetic or kidney cancer or, you know, things of that nature. You know, who would think hair? But it's something that's every day, and every people are constantly impacted by it negatively when you have so many things that are telling you, you know, you're not beautiful, you're not, you know, welcomed, you know. And so that's when it really started for me. I thought that that would be the, in moving here and just, you know, getting a feel for the community, I was like, this needs to happen.
That's very cool. Once again, when the event is and what your hopes are for the event. How many people do you hope to attend?
As many as possible.
I want to ask that question.
Yes.
Now, so.
As many as possible. We can fill up Zeitgeist. That would be great.
That would be super awesome. Again, the event is on Saturday, July 8th. So not this Saturday, but the next Saturday coming on up from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. So it's only a 3-hour segment. Please get there early so that you can get your tickets to get your goodie bags. Again, there's a limited amount, so you want to make sure that you get your first chance to get that. And then again, if you need more information, you can visit our Facebook page. Just go to Project Natural, yes. And you can view it in the events section, or you can just search Natural Hair Symposium and in events in Facebook, and it'll pop right up. You can also go to my own website, projectnatural.com. And I have a post about the event, too, which will, again, link you back to the Facebook page.
Absolutely.
Event.
Yes. You can also find it on Community Action Duluth's website on Facebook. And I just really quick like to just give a shout out to Community Action Duluth. If anyone has not been to Community Action, you should definitely check out Community Action Duluth. It is a powerhouse in nonprofit organizations that really, really, really serve every aspect of a person's life. And I just appreciate them being flexible, you know, and allowing me to really take this project on.
Community Action Duluth is one of the best nonprofit organizations in the entire region. Yeah. Yes. They really are.
Awesome. So happy to be working with them. Happy to be working with Shadell. Yes. We are missing one of our partners.
We are.
Janessa.
You
want
to give a shout out to
yes.
her, please?
Yes, Janessa.
Yes, Janessa has been an integral part of the planning, and we are sad she that has. She is not here today. She's actually volunteering, doing some awesome work in our community today.
Yes.
But we want to, you know, thank her for being a part of our team, and we're just really excited. So we hope people feel empowered and want to come on out, learn, and see some awesome artwork, get some great, you know, goodie bags and giveaways and whatnot. We just hope to see everyone there.
Yes, absolutely. And leave feeling empowered.
Yes.
Absolutely. So I'm so honored again to have had on the show today Shadell Maddox-Simmons from Community Action Duluth and Professor Teresa Hardaway from the University of Minnesota Duluth. This is a Natural Hair Symposium coming up on July 8th. That's Saturday at 3 p.m. in the Zeitgeist on Superior Street in downtown Duluth. You do not want to miss it. This is People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. Have a great evening and a great weekend.